Okay, once again, this is Adam Gregg interviewing Glenn Gregg about his World War II experiences. This is tape two, and right now we are just on the other side of a graded road outside the town of Kolslar in Germany.
It was what the army would call a stalemate. Germans were on the top side, we were dug in well on the bottom side. The Germans probably had the advantage, but a stalemate, what a stalemate really does is to tell you that it's kind of boring. We would do things, young kids, again, we're teenagers, and we'll do things. When we get bored, well, we'll do dumb things. And this next part will be about a dumb thing that I did. But I'm not the only one that does things when they're young and when they're bored. So I'm not going to be an exception, but I'm the one that we're talking about here. So I was one of these days when it was, you know, it rains almost all the time that we were started on that offensive. And we never once realized that. I never realized that I was uncomfortable because it was raining. I don't remember complaining because we've never had a change of shoes or socks for now 10 days. 10 days with being wet. I guess that's what the Army does, is put you in that kind of a physical shape that you don't get a cold, you don't get sick. And when you're a teenager, you are invincible. Not quite. One of those days, I decided that I'm going to just jump up and go talk to my buddy. I did that quite often. Would jump. He was probably about 30 feet away from his foxhole was about 30 feet away from mine, and we'd jump back and forth, and every once in a while, and didn't have anything particular to say, but we could have hollered back and forth, but no, I had to run over there. So I ran over there, and I got just about there, or I got about halfway there, and I stumbled over something. Geez, I didn't know what it was, but it just my legs, both of them went out from under me, and I just went head first right into a muddy mud puddle. People were laughing at me all over the place. What a clumsy ox I was. And I thought, oh, geez, how could this happen to me? What did I do? I'm not supposed to fall down like that. And there was nothing there that I knew of. And I was laying there watching those guys laugh at me. And I looked down there and I, geez, there's blood on my leg. Where'd that come from? And then it started to hurt a little bit. And that hurt a lot. And I suddenly realized, God, I must have been shot. So what kind of shape am I? I wanted to get out of there. I was kind of out in the open. I knew that. I was halfway covered in mud, but I was still out in the open. So I did. I got up and I crawled over to my buddy's foxhole. Got in there. By that time, he was kind of worried about me because he could see that there was something the matter too. But it wasn't bad. It didn't think. It didn't seem like it was. Where'd the blood come from? It had to be bad. We're close range. All I know is that there was something struck my leg, my ankle, right above my ankle, and struck with such a force that it just took that ankle and the other one, along with it, had just turned me upside down. That was the extent of that, of my, the fatality part of it. Very unheroic, just carelessness. But now all of a sudden I've become a casualty. And I wasn't intending to be a casualty. I haven't done our country any good at all yet. They went to all the trouble to get me over here, and look, geez, did I screw that up? Well, we did have a first aid person with us, in back of this berm or this bank, road bank. And he looked at it and he said, well, I'll wrap it up, but you got to get back to Battalion 8, which is about 500 yards in back across an open plain. So I couldn't do anything until nighttime. So he wrapped it up as best he could, and at nighttime, I and another guy helped me, and I did pretty good by myself. I mean, I didn't have to have a guy on each side of me, one guy on one side of me, and we went that 500 yards. And it was through the mud. It wasn't very much fun, but it was dark, but we went and got to Battalion 8. And I never forget going in there, how it was in a basement, and they had a candle. It was the first candle we've seen for a long time at nighttime. It just seemed so warm. Forgot all about being hit. It was just, that candle seemed so homey. And it was dry in this basement, and it was just so nice. And I just wanted to stay there forever. At Battalion 8, they looked at it and said, they said what happened. Evidently it was a ricochet bullet that hit me kind of coming in sideways. It must have hit the road or a rock and glanced out, so it wasn't a good shot by a German after all. It was just a lucky thing, or unlucky for me. But anyway, it took me down, but it didn't go all the way through my foot. But it went in there far enough where he said, I'm going to send you back to division hospital you'll probably be there for maybe 3 or 4 weeks before that's healed up. Being in that basement where it was warm and that candle, and it just made my invincibility come back to me, and my patriotic feeling and wanting to do what I'm supposed to be sent over there to do. I wanted to go back up online, and I told him, bandage me up best you can, as long as it's not going to, it didn't tear my foot off or anything, just bandage me up and I'll go back up there and I'll be all right. And if it gets any worse, I'll come back and then you can take me to the hospital. Well, we'd like to, if we could, in the next day or so, we'll probably get this Kolar town, and I'd like to be a part of that. Well, it was just another non-com medic that was at battalion, so it was all right with him. He bandaged up best he could and said, go to it, go on back. So away we went, although I did talk him into letting me stay there until before it got light, because it was so comfortable there and it's so dry. They didn't have any change of clothes or anything, and my clothes were wet, but I wanted to stay there, and so they let me stay there, and I went over in the corner and just slept really good. And then next morning, or early in the morning before it got light, I went back and got my foxhole. And that was about the end of that. That for a while anyway. That didn't feel badly at all. It hurt a little. It was uncomfortable, like a little boil would be down there, or blister. And we stayed there a few more days. And it was decided that we were going to try to come into Kolar on a different route. We came up. Instead of coming up the hill where the Germans were, we were going to try to find some higher ground. We could see they saw some higher ground off to our right. So we pulled back one night, several nights I think after I'd been shot, pulled back, and then the next morning was going up to this higher ground. And there were some shots fired. And we thought, maybe we won't be able to get up there after all. Maybe there's Germans are shooting us. We don't have to crawl all the way up there. And maybe there's Germans up there. We don't know. But then the next first thing I know, there was four American tanks. Four of them came up on one side of us. Don't know where they came from or who asked them to come, but they were there. And if that wasn't, geez, that was just Those were the first tanks that we have seen in action in that couple months up being up online. And it was really great to see them. That made us really feel invincible. And so they came, they were going to lead us, they were going to go first and kind of pave the way for us until we got up on top of the hill, and then they were going to go again. But they were going to get us on top of the hill. So they started off across these plains where the rifle, they were small arms fire, German small arms fire was pretty heavy, but that didn't bother the tanks any. Except all of a sudden, we saw this white ball way over to our left come across the plain, right in front of us, and hit one of our tanks. And that's the first time I've ever seen an anti-tank fire on a tank. And that anti-tank gun fired that white hot ball of fire and hit that tank and put it out of commission, and got the guys jumped out of there. Pretty soon there was another one, and they hit three of those four tanks before the fourth one finally got turned around, got out of there. But four of those tanks were decommissioned, and several of the guys probably got hurt pretty bad. They weren't close enough that we could tell, but we was kind of concerned about it. It didn't look good for us, and it was very depressing to see that happen. We were so excited about having those tanks come, and then to see them knocked out so easily by that anti-tank. And they only had one. It was probably only one anti-tank battery, but it was so far away. It was probably a mile. It seems unbelievable. It's a mile away, but it seemed like it to us. It was at least a half a mile away from those tanks. And they were right on their mark. They never missed. But anyway, that was so much for the tanks. Now it was up to us to get up there ourselves, and we decided to go up there at night. And we did. And fortunately, when we got up on top of the hill, it wasn't occupied by Germans. And the Germans had a part of the Siegfried Line again. They had a trench up there on all hilltops. I guess they must have had a trench. But there was a solid trench, probably 8 foot, maybe 7 foot deep. That was all ready for us. We just jumped into that, and there we were. And we were looking down on this Kozlar, which is about half a mile away now from us. But we were looking more down than we were before. And it looked like we could take that town. We didn't exactly know what kind of support we were going to have on each side, but we were assured that there were going to be other companies that were going to support us when we made that move. Suddenly, it was Thanksgiving, just out of the blue. We didn't know it. You know, in wartime like that, when you're on the front line, you have no idea what day it is, or what we're celebrating, or what Thanksgiving. Are we that close to Thanksgiving? It was Thanksgiving. And you know how we knew? We knew because we had hot food brought to us. And it was turkey. It was hot. It was mashed potatoes. I guess wasn't hot, but you could tell it was hot at one time. And the same way with the turkey. And it wasn't good, but it made us feel so proud. It just, they don't send us up there and then just forget about us. They know we're there, and they're gonna do what they can to support us, and I could see that. And that Thanksgiving was a great one. That was a super Thanksgiving. There wasn't anybody firing on us, and we ate most of the day, because that was the first time in surely over a month that we've had anything but our regular canned K rations, or what that we eat every day. And that again, as much as we complain, as soldiers complain, I don't remember complaining about the food. I guess we complain sometimes if the cigarettes are late coming, because cigarettes were more of a necessity than food. That seems funny now, but it was a necessity. And food, well, we got by all right. We didn't, it wasn't good, but it was all right. But, so Thanksgiving went and passed, and we were on this hill. Koslar was coming, and I noticed my foot was bothering me. Now it's been a couple, two, 3 days since I was shot. That foot is starting to bother more than it should. And, but I knew that we were going to take that town, we were going to get in that town soon. And sure enough, orders came that we were going to do that. And we were the ones that were going to do it, and they were going to tell us when, but it was going to be forthcoming. And I want to stick around for that. So I did. I don't know if it was after the night after Thanksgiving, or maybe several nights after Thanksgiving. Remember when I told you about our guard duty, that how important that is to Army life. You have to have your guard on duty. The whole Army depends on that protection. But nothing's perfect. And for some reason or other, and nobody ever will know, group of people that were supposed to be on duty went to sleep and didn't wake up anybody else. And there we are, all sound asleep. And boy, we were sound asleep. I remember the first thing that I knew that something was wrong, that I had some dirt fall in the back of my neck. And then that's what woke me up. And I heard people, and I heard people talking, but I couldn't understand what they were saying. Geez, they were close. It was dark, but it was morning. I think it was getting daylight. It was dark in the trench, I know that, but maybe it was starting to get light up above us. I looked up, others did too. Again, there was about, there's 30 or 40 of us in this long trench, and we all, I guess, realized that things weren't right when we looked up and saw people jumping over the tent, over the trench. And they were talking in low voices, but still we couldn't understand anything they were saying. And that kind of scared us. I mean, we were petrified. I don't know about it. Anybody, but I was petrified. I knew we were goners. I knew they had to be Germans. Who else would they be? Because they were jumping across the trench the wrong way if they were Americans. They were going the wrong direction if they were Americans. They had to be Germans. Sure enough, somebody down the line, I don't know whether one of those guys looked into the trench or one of our guys decided that they better start firing. But somebody started something. I'm not so sure that it wasn't one of them. I don't know. I shouldn't say that because it's, I don't know. But I suspect that maybe it was one of them that saw that there was something moving in that trench and dropped a grenade in there. And because I know that on that end of the line, why we lost a couple people. And that could have been when we did. But when that grenade went off, most of us, I think all of us, were awake before then and realized what had happened, realized that our guard is, that we were in the midst of a German counterattack. And there they were. Just look up. There they were. A counterattack right above us. God, talk about scared. Man, oh man. But there was nothing to do now except fire. And fire we did. And so did they. I don't know we had to scare them too, because they weren't expecting us to jump out of that trench like that and to jump up and started firing. They didn't expect that. We had to just scare the hell out of them, but geez, we were scared. And I don't know how long it lasted, or I don't know how many men were killed, but it couldn't have lasted over 5 minutes. Geez, it didn't last. 5 minutes, I bet, was it. And when it was over and done with, we looked around, and what Germans were still there were wounded or killed, and the others were running away. And we were still there. We in our trench, we couldn't run any place. We would have liked to have. We were pretty well protected. We had the advantage. Those guys were caught out in the open. And so it was, we lucked out when we broke the rules of all Army rules about going to sleep at night. And we lucked out of it. But not without a lot of fear going through us, and we lost people. I really don't know how many people. I don't know, but I know we had to take some people down that were hurt, and there were some on the other end that were killed. So, and that's where I got it. There were a lot of Germans that wanted to surrender right away. And we were so scared, you know, we killed them. They were trying to surrender, and we were killing them. And it wasn't because we were that vicious. We were too scared. We didn't know what to do. We were just firing. And we did finally take some prisoners. That's where I got some of my mementos that I still have around home, was from that particular engagement and from those prisoners. And that was a morning that we won't forget for a long time. It was a wartime experience that we were really lucky to come out of that like we did. We didn't deserve that. You know, there was a lot of luck in war. Jeez, most of it is luck. It's either bad luck or just really good luck. And, you know, when I got hit, the way that was luck. And it was dumbness. It was, war is won by who makes the least mistakes, I think. But anyway, that segment of that hilltop skirmish was over with, and it was after Thanksgiving. It had to be awful close to 1st of December. And the weather, you know, I don't remember what the weather was, so it couldn't have been very bad. Other than we're wet and muddy, it wasn't snowy and wet. It wasn't cold. I wasn't cold. But I was muddy, and my foot still had that same bandage on it, and it wasn't very good. I knew that, and as soon as we got back from this coastal ordeal, I was going to go to the hospital for a while. So, and lo and behold, the next morning, was it? We're going to go down there, and again, we don't fight at nighttime, I guess, so we go in the morning. Why that is, I'll never know. We probably could have gone all the way down into town in nighttime and nobody would have known anything about it, but we didn't. We got to wait until daytime. So daytime dusk, it wasn't daylight. It was just like the Germans when they counterattacked it, why it was that, just beginning to get light. And we were running down the hill. It was, wasn't down much hill, but it was down some. And we zigzag and fall, we'd go down for a while and get up and run again. And things were going pretty good. We could see companies on each side of us that were doing the same thing. So we had our flanks covered. We thought pretty good about it. It was going pretty good. Got down. We started hearing quite a bit of heavy fire. We didn't seem to receive a lot of heavy fire, but the people on our left and our right seemed like they were getting some heavy fire. And it turned out that they were. Because we went into town without losing anybody. I don't think we lost anybody. And we got inside the town and kind of took over. I mean, we saw Germans on the other side of town running back and forth and shot at them and so we felt like we were completing our job. But lo and behold, what happened was that the companies on our left and our right, when we was coming down the hill, received so much fire, they were pinned down and, in fact, had to turn around and go back. And we didn't know that until we were clear down inside the town, and then we were cut off. Then they came around and cut us off. And here we were. We finally got inside Coast Guard and took over parts of it, but only with about 20 guys. And the Germans had most of the town yet. And there we were. So what do we do? Well, we kind of, because we were in the minority, why we kind of played it pretty cool. The nighttime, when it got dark, why we would kind of rummage around for something to eat. In the daytime, why we kept pretty quiet. We would hide. We would see some Germans once in a while, and we could have shot at them, but we would rather stay secluded and so that they wouldn't know that where we were, but they knew we were there. One of the best reasons they would know that we were there is that when we got cut off, why our own people would fly these little Cub airplanes and drop supplies for us. Again, more power to them. They're thinking of us all the time. They're not just throwing us out there forgetting about us. The trouble is, it's in daytime, and the Germans had the superiority, so they got the prize in there. We didn't get any of that stuff. And that also told the Germans that we were there someplace or other. Germans didn't really make any big effort to try to find us. We stayed pretty well hid, but my foot was a real concern. And we were in this town for a couple of days already. And it's been almost a week or more now since I've been shot. And my foot needs real attention. It looks terrible. All the mud and the grime and all that doesn't help any, but it looks bad. And the people that I was with, why, they said, you need some attention. The best thing you can do is go out there and surrender and let the Germans take care of you. And we thought about that for a little bit. And there was a couple guys that volunteered to go with me. But we thought about it a little more, and I don't know if we never had guts enough to do it, or we just decided that it wasn't the thing to do. But anyway, we didn't do it. And I'm glad we didn't, because then the Americans broke through. They came through, and they knew they were there, and broke through and got me out of there. And saw me and got me to the battalion aide, and the battalion aide got me as quick as they could. Nobody wanted to mess with me now, because it didn't look that good. And I went back into Holland someplace or other, and I don't know what the name of the town was, but it was Holland. And that's where our divisional hospital, or our core hospital, was. And they looked, and they didn't want to do anything with me. It was that bad. And it really didn't concern me that much. It was just a foot. I mean, it was a muddy old bloody foot. But anyway, they airlifted me. And back in those days, when you airlifted people, it was in case of emergency. And so they airlifted me to London, which wasn't a long trip. But it was in an old beat-up C-47. Boy, what a rough ride that was. Never forget that. Man, that was... When, and I don't mean that Germans weren't firing on us or anything like that. It was just rough. And I knew that the English Channel was underneath us. I would rather die of wounds than drown. But anyway, we landed in London without any problem. And
we're going to stop the tape for just a second.
Okay.
Yes, the injured Glenn is flying over the English Channel, headed to London.
London was wasn't much of an experience for me because, well, it was too, because when we got to London, I again was impressed on the dedication that the people at the hospital showed people coming off the front line. They were just, they want to know how things are going, and they just would do anything. Oh, you know, when they unloaded me, I was still in my original battle dress, if you will, the mud from head to toe. I had to be a nurse's worst nightmare, and that they didn't bat an eye. They peeled everything off of me and washed me up, and asked me all kinds of questions. It really made me feel comfortable. Until that day we landed, the same day we landed, one thing I ought to mention when we landed, as we were going from the airport to the hospital, there was some sirens going off. What are the sirens? Are we going to have an air raid? The buzz bombs. Oh yeah, I read about the buzz bombs. That's German bombs, unmanned missiles that the Germans would send over and try. When they ran out of fuel, why, this missile would die and fall to the ground and explode. A nerve-wracking kind of a thing, a psychological weapon. Certainly nothing military-wise. What I didn't carry much, but psychologically, geez, because it had a lot of explosive in it. So I did get to see I didn't really see it either. But anyway, I was in London when a buzz bomb flew over. So that's what that was. And then after they cleaned me up and looked me over, they said that it was that I'd let that leg go too long, and I knew that already. But that, you know, there's a chance that you might lose your leg. You might as well know that. And that I didn't, you know, that I'm the invincible 18-year-old, you know, that good shape and nothing could happen to me. But here I am. And am I going to lose a leg over a ricochet bullet that was shot into me because I was messing around, not doing anything particular? That sure didn't sound very good to me. That made me worry. But they went on. They said, "We got this medicine. It's new, but we've used it. We've used it quite a bit, but we're still in the test phase of it. And we want to give it. We're gonna give that to you. It's called penicillin. And we're gonna shoot you full of penicillin, or quite a bit of penicillin, and you try to stop this infection." And quite a bit of penicillin is what they did. They just enormous. When I think of how careful they are today with penicillin and how some people are allergic to it and all that kind of stuff, they didn't waste any time about finding out anything like that. They just pumped me full of penicillin. And fortunately, I wasn't allergic to it. And fortunately, I had some very positive results from it. And they sent me then from this emergency area in London. They sent me, and I evidently by bus. I don't remember how I got there, but clear up into Liverpool, which is, I forget the area that it is, but it's a Liverpool area anyway. It's quite a ways from London, north and on the Atlantic side of the of the island. And there was a hospital up by the town by the name of Chester, and which is also close to the town by the name of Hayward. And but all of this, be as it may, that was going to be my stay for the next quite a few months in healing my wound up. If you can call that a wound, I'm not sure whether it deserves for that, because it was mostly infection caused by messing around. But it was a wound, and I'll take it. And it took me off the front line. It took me away from all that killing and all that mud and all that terror and all that fear. And I wasn't the hero type anymore. I just wanted to live through this war and go home. I didn't care if I was going to be a hero or not. I didn't care if I was going to be a part of actually winning the war. I had enough, and I got scared, and I want to go home. And so I stayed there a long time. If you remember that shortly after I got into my hospital bed up by Liverpool, England, and clean sheets, the Battle of the Bulge began. And that was right in the area where I was. And my division was on the north, wasn't right in the brunt of it, but it was on the north edge of that. And I surely would have been involved some way or other with that. And I missed that. I missed all of that, and I guess somebody was looking over me. And I know my mom felt awful good about it, that I was that I was in a hospital. And you wonder, well, how come you stayed in a hospital so long? Geez, here we are in December, and I stayed in a hospital until April, until almost the last of April. Why did you stay that long? I mean, how bad of shape were you in? Well, not that bad at physical shape. The way it turns out, you know, it goes back to one of your high school experiences. I had learned some, you know, when I was a senior in high school, they made me take a class, typing class. And I had to learn to type. And because I could type a little bit, poorly, but just a little bit, they kept me in this hospital as a day clerk about twice as long as I should have been there for my wound. And I missed the whole last part of the whole war. I guess I'm not necessarily proud of all of that, but I think that probably is a pretty good thing for me that you should learn to type when you go to high school. So, but sooner or later, I had to go back to active duty. I mean, they just couldn't, just because I learned to type, they can't keep you there forever. I'm an infantryman. That's what I was trained to do. And so the war was still going on, and they needed me back on the front line. So I was going to go back to my division, and away I went. I joined the division. Of course, after the Battle of the Bulge, after the American forces went across the Rhine River, and after the Russians were moving in from the east, and the Germans were all practically beaten, I joined just 2 days before the war actually ended. I joined my unit again. There was no fighting then. There was more processing of prisoners more than anything else. And so I got involved with that for a while. And then they sent me to a little town. I was with my division, the 29th Infantry Division then. And they sent that fighting division that went through all this combat up to a little town in extreme northern Germany to occupy it and to be a part of the occupation forces. And it was a town that it was a scenic town, untouched by war. You would never know there was a war. The people were for finally we see civilians, and the civilians were forgiving. They were more than that, almost thankful for us. It seemed like they were glad it's over with. They were relieved, maybe. Maybe not thankful that that they lost the war, but relieved that the war is finally over with. Because civilians in Germany took quite a beating if you lived anywhere near a metro area. So for the most part, civilians had no animosities towards us. There was some younger teenage kids, you know, that were growing up through the Nazi doctrine that would kill us if they had a chance. And but we were ready for that kind of thing. We went around with our guns. We never was without our rifles. We were prepared for anything that might happen. But it didn't happen very often. We were there to show the Germans that we won the war, that it is an unconditional victory, and we are here, and for the time being, we're running this country, and we're the boss. And that's what we did, and we did it in a polite way. We had roadblocks that we checked on, where the civilians would have to stop and show their credentials, show who they are, and that's about all. It was just something that we could show off. And, you know, and we were polite about it and got along with the Germans good. And they would give us some of their potatoes that they had down into the cellar and that kind of stuff. And we got along very good, especially with the ones out in the rural area where we were, where we were with our 29th Infantry Division. That was kind of a, fun time. A relaxing time to know that the war was over. You had had a chance to play a part in it. Not a decisive part, certainly, but a part. And now it's time to relax and enjoy. We started having regimental football games. The German war was over in May, I believe it was, and the Japanese war was still going on. So we were in Germany, and we had regimental football games, and extracurricular activities like that. USO would have places that we could come and dance if we wanted to, or have Coke and drinks, and the Army was slowly bringing us back to normality after going through that short combat time. And deep down inside, I knew that I didn't spend a lot of time up on the front line, and to go home, they take the people that spent the most time in the front line. So I suspected that I wasn't going to go right away, and I didn't. And then further, I suspected that I might be shipped overseas or shipped over to Japan to be a part. Seeing I've had combat experience, they would send me to Japan to when they invaded that country, and because that was going to be a bloody invasion. And so I was very concerned about that. Geez, I didn't want to go someplace and start all over fighting again. I just about had enough of that. And fighting in Japan would be worse than in Germany anyway, I'm sure. So then one day we heard about this thing, this big bomb that they dropped someplace or other. They killed a whole bunch of people in Japan. And didn't know much more about it, but it was certainly was a big one. And in a day or so away, then another great big one dropped and it killed, geez, more people yet. And the first thing we know, well, the war's over with. So I'm one of those people that when you get into discussion whether they should have dropped the bomb or not, on Nagasaki and Hiroshima, whether they should have dropped that bomb and killed all those people. I'm one of those people that firmly believe that that was the thing to do. That I'm, because I would have had been a part, I felt like I would have been a part of that invasion if they didn't. And at least I would have known that there would have been a lot of American lives lost in that invasion. It might not have been mine, but it had been a lot of them. War was over now for sure, and made us feel better yet. But again, I didn't have enough points to go home, so they, if you remember, the capital was Berlin. Berlin was taken by the Russians during the war. But it was agreed upon before the war ever got close to being ended that when Berlin did fall, it would be occupied by French, British, English, and Russian troops and American troops. It was going to be divided up. And so that's the way they did it. And that was about in September. The war ended in May. And by September, they had it divided up. And we were amongst the first Americans to go into Berlin as the occupational forces of the Northwest sector, the American sector of Berlin. And I spent that winter then in Berlin, kind of a quartermaster type of job. It was easy. They treated us good. We had a lot of good food, entertainment. Never worked too hard. I was in charge of running a cold storage plant that was